Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
The majority of the work nowadays, today, is using adult stem cells, particularly the work that is close to or is ongoing in clinical trials.
That is Dr. Kurt Kibben of the Stem Cell Center, stating it very simply. Adult stem cells and embryonic stem cells there may be a similar interest in both, but adult stem cells and the research that is stemming, no pun intended from it, is proving far more fruitful. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Monday afternoon, the 2nd of August. We're going to start out today's program talking with Scott Klusendorf of Life Training Institute about adult stem cells and embryonic stem cells when they're pitted against one another in research and actual results. Which turns out on top? Our call-in number for the next 2 hours of the program, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can email us right here in the studio. We get your emails in real time, talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. A little bit later in the program, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with her. In John chapter 9, we'll talk about Jesus healing with mud. It's part of our summer series with her on, in the gospel readings, very often Jesus is using physical elements to do his divine work, and he still does. In the second hour of the program, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us. We will go to an often misunderstood and misapplied Bible passage, Revelation 3:20. Now, a lot of passages are difficult in the book of Revelation. This one, Jesus says, "I stand at the door and knock. If anyone opens, I will come into him. I will eat with him." And many, many Christians believe that Jesus is talking there about conversion. We'll see if he is in the second hour of the program. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Hope Lutheran Church in Aurora, Colorado, will be our guest. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at issuesetc. Scott Klusendorf is a regular guest. He's president of Life Training Institute and author of the book, The Case for Life. Scott, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Scott, if we pit the research results, the clinical results of adult stem cell research versus embryonic stem cell research, is there any comparison?
At the moment, clearly the adult cells are outperforming their embryonic counterparts. Could that change in the future? It's possible. In fact, we had a story late last week about a guy at UC Irvine who is claiming that he's going to be able to inject in the first acceptable and permissible clinical trials of embryonic stem cells. He's going to be able to inject these cells into people who are suffering spinal cord injuries, and he claims that this is going to work. But here's the thing. I've been looking through the literature ever since I read that story last week to see if there's been any changes to the basic problems we have with embryonic cells. And it's possible that there is some expert out there that knows better than me, but just my looking over the research to date, I still see that we have a problem with embryonic cells when it comes to tumor formation and rejection by the body. And the tumor formation is the bigger of the two, and that is, although these embryonic cells are very flexible, they're also hard to control, and that's a real problem.
What is the basic difference between embryonic stem cells and adult stem cells?
In an embryonic treatment, we take a human embryo, we grow it to about the 14-day stage, and then we extract from that embryo its stem cells, which are the basic building blocks of the body that all bodily tissue is formed from. We then take those stem cells, which in the process kills the embryo, and then those cells are implanted into the bodies of people suffering from illness in hopes that they can be allegedly cured. That's in general what embryonic stem cell research is. Adult stem cell research does not involve killing a human donor. We don't have to kill you, Todd, to take stem cells from your bone marrow and implant them into your brain where they become nerve cells that can then be used to treat certain types of brain disease. So the one type of research, embryonic, does not require killing a human subject to go forward, where the embryonic cells that we extract from the embryo does kill the embryo.
So the difference here, the essential and ethical difference here, is not in results or
no.
Which of these two gets the better results.
The moral question trumps the practical one. In other words, if you have a good eye, Todd, and I have a bad eye, I don't have a right to forcibly take your good eye to make my bad eye better. If the embryos in question are human beings, they should not be killed so someone else can benefit. We wouldn't kill two-year-olds to benefit five-year-olds. So the central moral question in play here is not, are these cures useful? They might be. It's possible, Todd, and I know there's pro-lifers who disagree with me on this, but I think we need to be careful. It's possible that one day embryonic cell treatments are going to prove to be miraculous in their ability to cure. It's possible. At the moment, the research isn't bearing that out, but we shouldn't pretend that it one day won't. What we need to focus on, like a laser beam, is the moral question, is it permissible to kill one human being so another can benefit? And this is what drives me nuts listening to people in our government talk about embryonic stem cell research. From the president on down right now in this administration, we hear people saying, we're going to allow science to get back in its proper place, where it's no longer handcuffed by metaphysical propositions. Let me translate what they mean by that. We're going to unhinge science from moral thinking, and we're going to let science do what it wants to do, free from ethical restraints. Well, that's just absurd. Would anybody call it scientific progress if we allowed five-year-olds to be killed to treat 10-year-olds? If that were scientifically beneficial, would that be a good thing?
We heard early from Kurt Kiven of the Stem Cell Center saying that the clinical results of adult stem cell research have far outstripped the clinical results of embryonic stem cell research. And then later in the same AP story, he goes on to say that both types of stem cells, both sources of stem cells ought to remain open, and clinical trials and research needs to continue on both. And this is pretty standard from the research community. They're saying, yeah, we got to admit adult stem cells are doing their job, but let's not give up on embryonic stem cells. If there's a reason to give up on them, what is it essentially?
Well, I think the reason to give up on it is a moral reason, in principle, that we ought not be killing tiny human subjects to benefit bigger human subjects. That's the key issue. From a treatment protocol point of view, look, there's no doubt that at the moment the embryonic cells are performing nowhere near their adult counterparts. In fact, we have yet to inject them into human subjects, and there's a reason for that. We have not been able to control the problems with embryonic cells in mice, let alone men, nor have we been able to generate cures in mice, let alone men. And what has happened now is the government has greenlighted the process of moving embryonic treatments forward. But like I said a moment ago, I have yet to see any conclusive evidence so far. Now, it may be there, but I haven't seen it, where we've overcome the problem with tumors, the problem with tissue rejection. These are things that have not been cleared up. And then you've got a whole ethical mess involved of how we're going to get these embryonic cells. Well, there clearly aren't enough, quote, leftover embryos that are simply sitting on ice where parents no longer want them, so they're going to donate them to science. Now, of course, I find that morally objectionable for the reasons I just gave you a moment ago, principally that one human being shouldn't be killed to benefit another. But setting that aside for the moment, we don't have enough, quote, leftover embryos, and I hate that term, but that's the use you hear in the field. There aren't enough of these embryos because most parents aren't willing to relinquish them. So how are we going to get them? That leads us to a very insidious relationship between embryonic stem cell research and cloning, where we take a process where we take a human egg, we strip the DNA from it, we insert donor DNA in its place, and then we jolt that new entity into reproducing as a clone. That cloned embryo would not then be treated as a valuable human subject. It would be used as a means to an end. In other words, a source to generate stem cells that would have your exact genetic structure. That's what we're talking about when we talk about human cloning.
With only about 30 seconds here, Scott, before we take our first break, if you listen to the proponents of embryonic stem cell research, the kind that are basically saying all breaks off, full steam ahead, this is where all the federal money ought to go and the private money ought to go. They make it sound like embryonic stem cells are far more fruitful clinically than adult stem cells. About 30 seconds to respond to that.
Well, we heard this in the 2004 presidential election when John Edwards told everybody in wheelchairs they'd be miraculously healed if John Kerry was elected president because Kerry would lift the ban on embryonic stem cell research. Well, first of all, there is no ban. It just meant that up until that time anyway, up until last year really, you couldn't use federal tax dollars to destroy embryos for research. Well, now you can. Look, what's going on, and there's just no doubt about it, what's going on is an attempt to overstate what the benefits of embryonic cell treatments are in hopes of selling the public. But look, I think the game is up and people are starting to see that this has been a bunch of hype.
When we come back from this break, we'll have 10 more minutes with Scott Klusendorf on this Monday afternoon, the 2nd of August, talking about adult stem cell research versus embryonic stem cell research. Scott is president of Life Training Institute and author of the book, The Case for Life. You find a link to both Life Training Institute and a way to find out about his book at our website, issuesetc.org. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker. Welcome back. It's Monday afternoon, the 2nd of August. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Talking about adult stem cell research versus embryonic stem cell research. Do you have a response for those who assert, and I think an AP version of the story that we're talking about asserts that the reason adult stem cell research is proving more fruitful now, if we just take a snapshot, is because adult stem cell research has had a head start. They've been working on them longer than on embryonic stem cells. What are your thoughts there?
Well, first of all, these are the same people, in many cases, that told us we were just a few short years away from miraculous cures if we could just lift all the terrible restrictions that conservatives had placed on this exciting new research. Well, the reality is, Todd, that it has been perfectly legal to do embryonic stem cell research from the beginning. You just couldn't use federal dollars to kill the embryos. Private institutions could spend whatever they wanted. And by the way, nothing prevented you using federal money to engage in embryonic stem cell research at the mice level. In other words, dealing with mice, you could use it all day long. For that, you just couldn't actually kill a human embryo to do it. Now, keep in mind something. We have not been able to perfect or deal with the problems with embryonic stem cell research in mice, let alone men. So there's been no restrictions on the research at the rodent level. And so this idea that adult stem cell research is just so far ahead, well, yeah, that's sort of true, but it's also true that the problems, and this is the big issue, the problems with embryonic stem cell research have not been resolved. And that's the issue more than the time.
We often talk about the value of human life, and it struck me thinking about this afternoon before we talked that both sides of this debate on embryonic stem cells and research done with them agree that the embryo is valuable, but for two completely different reasons. You believe that the embryo is intrinsically valuable as a human being. Why do those who want to destroy them and harvest stem cells believe the embryo is valuable?
Well, they see it as being instrumentally valuable, and that works two ways. They see it as being instrumentally valuable, meaning it can serve a purpose to us. We can generate cures from it that will benefit other people. But, of course, that is question begging because it assumes the embryos that will be destroyed are not people. And that simply hasn't been argued for. They just assume it. If we were killing, as I said a moment ago, two-year-olds to cure five-year-olds, nobody would say, hey, you know, this is a debate about scientific progress versus those who want to keep us in the dark ages like those did in the days of Galileo. No, we would be talking about whether it's permissible to kill two-year-olds to benefit five-year-olds, and that's the issue we need to be looking at here. The other way they look at human life as being instrumental is they say you're not valuable for what you are, you're valuable for what you can do functionally. In other words, it's your self-awareness that gives you value rather than what you are by nature. And herein, Todd, lies the big worldview debate that's going on right now. What is it that makes you and I valuable? The secular left and the religious left loves to say that conservative and pro-life Christians are injecting their own theology and metaphysics into this debate when they claim that embryos are valuable human beings. And they say that's simply your religious view. Our view, they say, or what they mean by their view, they think their view is free of any metaphysical concerns, and that's simply not the case, and I'm going to demonstrate it right here. If I claim that an embryo has value and a right to life, I am indeed making a metaphysical claim, a claim about what gives humans value in the first place. But the guy on the other side of this debate is also asking and answering the same exact question I am. What makes us valuable in the first place? He just gives a different answer. Instead of saying that embryos are valuable for the kind of thing they are, he says they're valuable for what they can do instrumentally. Both of us are making metaphysical claims that go beyond what science tells us and involve both sides doing philosophical reflection on the nature of human persons and what it is that ultimately gives us value. It's unfair for their side to throw our side out as religious while they get a free pass.
And yet, you say these are assertions made beyond the claims of what science can tell us. which side of that debate on the real nature of the value of the human embryo actually has better science on its side?
Well, science can tell us what kind of thing something is. For example, if we want to know, is that a human embryo or a dog embryo, science helps us out there. What science can't do is tell us how to value something. But you make a great point, Todd. When it comes to doing science, it's the pro-life conservative side that is doing science, while the secular left tries to dismiss that science and turn it strictly into speculative thinking. I cannot believe some of the gymnastics I've seen some of my opponents go through in debates to try to deny what is very clear scientific evidence that what we're dealing with here is a member of the human family, not some other kind of species. And they try to explain that science away that would make a seven-day young Earth literal creationist, which they hate, look like somebody who is doing rocket science.
So are these two worldviews mutually exclusive? The human embryo as evidence, human embryo as instrumentally valuable as opposed to human embryo as intrinsically valuable, all the two mutually exclusive?
Yes, they are. You either believe that each and every human being has an equal right to life and equal value, or you don't. There is no middle ground here without getting into a very twisted and thick view of personhood ethics that allows us to set aside one class of human beings that can be destroyed from another class that can't be. You either believe we all have equal dignity and value, or you believe we only have it because of some property that we have in varying degrees that we may gain or lose during our lifetimes.
So tomorrow, let's say, you pick up the LA Times, whatever paper it is you like to read, and you find a headline there that says embryonic stem cell researcher, major breakthrough, embryonic stem cells now producing bona fide cures, and there's case after case, and everybody's doing the research, and the embryonic stem cell research now is showing tremendous fruitful clinical value here. Does it change the debate?
It doesn't change the moral and metaphysical debate. It would only have a change in the medical protocol debate. In other words, now we would say that embryonic cells appear to be outperforming their adult counterparts, which, of course, right now that isn't the case, but that would indeed be the change we would see. The metaphysical question, how should we treat human beings at the earliest stages of their development, would remain the same question we need to resolve. And I'll tell you, Todd, that is the worldview battle we're having right now. What is it that gives us value? Secularism has no answer to that question. It ultimately is going to end up being something instrumental. It is only the Christian worldview that, properly understood and properly articulated, can ground human dignity in a transcendent source such that we can say our value and equality is not grounded in what we do, it's grounded in the kind of thing we are because of whose image we bear.
Finally, then, when debating all pro-life issues, all facets of this, why should the question be, who is the unborn, Scott?
Well, it has to be that, because otherwise we will throw morality out the window. If all that matters is scientific progress, then why not kill five-year-olds if it'll help us cure those who are older? We end up with terrible, twisted things like the Tuskegee experiments of the 1930s and 40s. We end up with German experiments during World War II, where victims were given no dignity whatsoever and were simply used for their instrumental value. Once you divorce scientific progress from moral considerations that must anchor that scientific progress, well, then anything goes, might makes right.
And to the person, a pro-lifer who's listening to us, got their fingers crossed, saying, you know, I'm just counting on there being no successes with embryonic stem cell research, that it is a dead end, and that will help once and for all settle this debate. Does that settle the debate with about 30 seconds?
It does not. And we've got to do battle as Christians on the issue of human value. We have got to be able to explain why we believe humans have value, make arguments that are persuasive, that can resonate in the public square. I mean, I wrote a whole book for that reason on doing just that, because that's my area of concern as I look out across the culture. But we also have to be very concerned that one day it could be the case that embryonic cells work. And if they do, what's going to be our answer if all we've done is debate the practical side of it and not the moral side?
Folks, when you purchase Scott Klusendorf's book, A Case for Life, using the Amazon.com link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Look for The Case for Life by Scott Klusendorf. Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. Thanks, Scott.
Hey, great to be with you again, Todd.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. We like to do that early every week here on Issues, etc. This summer with her, we've been teaching our Sunday school lessons as usual, but the theme that we have been following lesson after lesson is Jesus using the physical elements of this world. We were in the Old Testament for many weeks where we watched God using the physical elements of this world to do healing and great miracles. And now in the gospel readings, we're finding Jesus doing exactly the same thing. Deaconess Pam Nielsen will be with us after this break.
You can call it what you like. I call it life.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues, etc. Issues, etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues, etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Sometimes a politician truly has a spine and actually does what he or she promised to do while campaigning. In this case, it's Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey. His state, like many others, is facing a huge deficit. In this case, over $1 billion. During the campaign, the governor promised to do all he could to balance the budget. This included not funding Planned Parenthood, the largest chain of abortion mills in the nation. As a result, Governor Christie excluded the funding of nearly 60 so-called family planning facilities, half of them run by Planned Parenthood. Pro-abortion members of the legislature put the funding back in, but the governor vetoed it, staying true to his word. All of us, not just those in New Jersey, owe him our heartfelt thanks.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.